All right. Okay.
Well, in front of us, I know we were doing this in the real detail. It's one of those stories, so I hope you don't mind. And I know it sometimes gets a rough repetitive, so I'm sorry about that. But we will move on. So last week, we read all the psukim, and we saw the story, how it unfolded in the Chumash, quite clearly. We went a little bit into some of the explanations. So we saw Rashi explain that the problem was that he hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. That's Rashi's view. And then we saw the Rambam, which was fascinating because the Rambam had a very philosophical view about the idea that he got angry. That was his thing, anger. And he said, Shimuna Hamayrim, listen, you rebels. And that was the disaster. And because of that, he was actually punished so harshly and he couldn't take the Jewish people into the land of Israel. There are many other commentaries, and today we'll see a few others. We should really do right away, but we won't. There is an argument, the Rambam, as always. The Ramban doesn't like the Rambam's view. Many others also have a few thoughts about it, and we'll see today a little bit of that. But more, we'll see other people's views. Again, each one has its own, they're all correct. Not one's not more correct than the other. Just gives us different perspectives on the story, as well as for us to understand, that's the beauty of it, how we view many things and many situations in our own lives. And hopefully, we're going to try really hard to get there. There's a beautiful lesson from the Maharal, who really writes on Rashi. This explanation of the Maharal, he actually wrote a sefer on Rashi, but he takes it a lot further. And his, I think, is very much in line. Hopefully, will help us also give us a bit of insight into our time now. Punkt happens to be Ol Hashgacha Pratis, that it is almost Rish Chodesh Elul. So we'll see some very nice insight from the Maharal as well. But we'll start before the Maharal. If you look at your sheets in front of you, I know this is still your sheets from last week, so turn the pages, and we're going to go to the page. It doesn't have a number on the page, but it has a number on the bottom, 5. So see if you can see a number 5. Maybe it's right away the second one. What's going on? I feel bad because I did staple it in a funny way because there's something in between. We'll see. This is the beginning, and then there's a 5A a few pages later. But we'll start with this, and that continues. So the explanation that we are going to give now is what we call the Svarnu, Rebbe Vadya Svarnu. It's in Italy, and I will show you. I just want to share the screen here. Sorry. Let's see. Okay. So the Svarnu explains really, really beautifully, and he gives a whole fascinating insight. It's a little bit detailed, but we'll do some inside, some I'll say orally, but to give us an understanding of where something went wrong here. So the truth is, what we have to understand, remember, we read the story. They're standing there. They're, as we said, they're in despair. They don't have water. But the way they approach Moshe and Aaron is in a certain way, as we said, quite a, if you want to say, chutzpahdik, a sort of desperate kind of way. And Moshe and Aaron's response is where we find a little bit of a problem. Now, why? Why is it a problem? When we analyze it, we think, what's the problem? The Jewish people are coming in such a terrible way. Again, putting in context, it's the 40th year in the desert. So they have already experienced so many incredible miracles and so much kindness from Hashem. They are about to enter the land of Israel, which means we have to keep in mind that we need what Moshe and Aaron are supposed to be doing is instilling as much as possible a tremendous amount of emunah and bitachon in Hashem in them. So let's see where the problem is according to the Svarnu. Interesting. I think the Svarnu also can be connected also to the month of Elul. And let's see how. Okay, so let's start on number 5. So kaches hamate v'dibartem el ha-sela. So you can see already from the words that he chooses that he's going to analyze both of these things. Hashem said to Moshe to take the stick. And then he said to him to speak to the rock. And as we mentioned, that's a little bit confusing. If you take a stick, you think you have to use a stick. But what does Hashem say? Take the stick and speak to the rock. Okay, so let's see how he says. Kvarovu hadeyais be'inyan chet mei meriva. He says there's many, many different opinions about the sin of, that this is the sin we call mei meriva, right? This quarrel of the water. V'haya safek etzel rabim, and there is a doubt that many people are grappling. B'ma chatu Moshe v'arein. What did they sin? What was the sin? What was the problem? Shenechtav aleihem, and the words that are written about them, it's quite harsh words. Loi ha'emantem, you did not believe in me. This is very harsh to say about Moshe and Aaron, don't believe in Hashem. And as he says, ma'alosam umarisem, ma'altem. Sorry, ma'altem over here means the fact that they rebel against Hashem, that they deny, so to speak, that they do something which is obviously totally against the will of Hashem. And that's actually the words that are used in the Chumash and other places describing the act that Moshe and Aaron did, which is very strong language. And he says, and as we know, the question is, if Hashem just wanted them to speak to the rock, why did they have to take the stick? If the sin was that Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock and that was against the will of the one who was sending him, then we have even a different question. But Mechet Aaron, what did Aaron do? Because he didn't hit the rock, he was just standing there, as we mentioned last week. So these are a lot of problems, a lot of holes that we have to understand what's going on. But when we stop to think deeper about this whole quarrel, so to speak, about the story, we have to realize and we have to understand that what was the objective of Hashem? What did Hashem want? And in a sense, how did Hashem want them to react? Moshe and Aaron, and almost, we might even say deeper, what did Hashem want in the fact that he even made them be lacking water to begin with, which brought them to even approach Moshe and Aaron? What was this whole setup? What was the goal? So we say, Al oifen sheyakiru rishas meriftam vihisvadu eschatosom vishavu v'rafaylamay. These are very powerful words. Sheyakiru, that they should recognize rishas, the rasha, the wickedness of their quarrel, that they should admit, in other words, confess, and we have that word vidui with tshuva, and so they should confess their sins, and vishavu, and they should do tshuva, and it should be healed. So you see, interesting, again, so all that Hashem wanted was that Moshe and Aaron should draw out, from the people, a recognition of their mistake. This is a big one. This is an interesting, fascinating idea that a lot of times in life, we do things that we don't realize as we're doing that, especially, as we said, when it's a difficult time. And we react. We just react. It's hard. It's harsh. We're in pain. Other people are suffering. And we react. Sometimes what we need is somebody outside of us to shake us and say, stop, have a look. What are you doing? Why are you reacting this way? Perhaps this is not the correct way. And this is what Hashem wanted for Moshe and Aaron here. But they didn't do it correctly. So let's see what they did. And this is fascinating, because he takes it a little bit deeper than that. How were they supposed to accomplish that, though? And that's the other big thing. Because even though a lot of times in life we make mistakes, and people around us are aware that we're making a mistake, it depends how they approach us as far as how we will react. Many times people will say, whatever, they can come on harsh, shush up, don't you see? And we will just, instead of realizing our mistake, we'll become immediately on the defensive, or we will actually justify what we're doing. It's just, it's not gonna work. So here we have to know the smart way, how to get the Jewish people to really be able to recognize that how they are reacting is off. Okay, so let's see what Hashem wants. So Hashem has a whole beautiful setup, but let's see. Unfortunately, it didn't go exactly that way. Okay, so let's see what he says. And oh, a very important statement that he says, Ki la yachbeitz b'mais hameis. We know, and we say this on Yom Kippur a lot, Hashem doesn't desire the death of the one who sinned. He wants us to do tshuva. He doesn't want us to continue and to go further and further and deeper into our mistakes. He wants us to fix up, to realize, and to grow from our mistakes. That's the ideal, as we say. Okay, therefore, what happens? So we say, this is where they went off with the intention of Hashem, and this is why, that's why they were punished.
Amnam Hamariva im Moshe Haisa. First of all, they were quarreling with Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because what did they say? Ba'amrei, Shehaisa Hanhagasai Bilti Shlema. They were attacking Moshe, and they said to Moshe that the way he was conducting himself wasn't complete. What does that mean? That he didn't lead them the proper way. He took them to the worst part of the desert. That's what they told him, right? No water. I mean, every part of the desert is bad, right? But when you're in a bad situation, you just know how to twist it, right? So to them, it was Moshe. You took us to the wrong place. You took us to a place where there's no water. And they were also angry at Hashem. And what was that? What was their quarrel with Hashem? What was their grudge? But Amram, Shahitziya me'eretz neisheves toiva el eretz midbar. Just that he took, I know you think, help from Egypt. But he took them out of a good land, a place where people were settled. And he took them to the desert. So they're upset with Hashem. They're upset with Moshe. Each one in their own different twist, but upset with both. Now, what happens? What are we supposed to do about that? So we say, how are we supposed to fix it? To let them know, taka, where they're making such a big mistake and their wickedness. So they need, what has to happen is that there has to be a tremendous miracle. And this miracle would let them know. Shehashliach hayamanig bishleimus v'hamishaleach Hativ Bishlichusai, the Loi Hara Klal. The miracle has to show two things. That the Shliach, which is Moshe Rabbeinu, he's the messenger from God, he's doing the right thing and he wants and he's completely following Hashem's way. And the Mishaleach, God himself, only wants good for the people. So somehow they have to display that in front of the people. And this is also fascinating. It's a beautiful thing we see a lot of times in Torah, that the way Hashem sets things out, it's almost like he has like the best teaching degree, where when you want to impart something, just telling somebody something is one thing. But when you actually experience something, it is so much deeper and it's so much more real. So he wants them to, he actually has like a demonstration here. And this miracle that he wants Moshe to accomplish will show the people in such a clear way that they can see Hashem means they're good and Moshe is only following Hashem's instruction. How would that come about? So the Sfarma tells us a fascinating thing. This is just a very general idea first. General, not philosophical so much, but just a general approach of Torah that we know, and I'll show you. He says like this. Ubihiyasei mine hanisim hamifursamim bekisvei hakodesh al echad mi gimel panim. So he gives us a general idea and introduction that there are three types of miracles that we experience, that we know, that are said in the Torah, but all of us experience. That's the truth. So one type of miracle, the first type of miracle, he says, that's the type of miracle, I'll show you, who nes nister, that's the hidden miracle. Kama yiridas hamatar, like rain coming down, vihimaleit min hachalaim, somebody gets sick but then they get healed. These are miracles that we do, Baruch Hashem, experience all the time. Rain comes, the crops grow. As we know, in the farm, that's a real blessing. And because it happens all the time, we know when we stop and think about it, or actually when it doesn't happen is when we stop and think about it. But most of the time, we just almost take it for granted because it becomes natural. But nevertheless, it's still a kindness of Hashem. And it is, on a certain level, also a miracle, especially when somebody gets sick and they get healed. But these are things that do happen more commonplace. And we say, and when we are, thank God, saved from a terrible situation. This is the type of miracle that tzaddikim can accomplish through their tefillos. And he gives different examples, Avram davening to God for different things, right? And accomplish different things. And even us, our davening accomplishes. We say Tehillim, and we see these things happening. Wonderful. That's very important. But, and I want to show, and he gives a few examples. And then Vahabez, who nes nigla. But then the second type of miracle is a more revealed miracle. Lo yuchal hateva lasaisa ba'isaya aifa. Nature can't do it. It's not natural. Definitely not natural. Aval yaseyu echa achar tnuais rabais b'meshech zman. Nature doesn't do it on its own, only when it's prompted. So you have to make a move for nature to do that. What's the example that he gives? And he says, this is done through his servants. Im hakdamas eiza tnua misuderes me'itai, through something that Hashem commands. Like, for example, he gives the example of the first time when they were missing water, at the beginning when they left Egypt, what did Moshe do? He had to hit the rock, right? That's what Hashem said there, hit the rock. So hitting the rock and getting water is a miracle. But nevertheless, because he's hitting the rock, there is something natural that he's doing. And sometimes you might think, well, he hit the rock, so water comes out. So there is like a natural component to it. But not only is there a natural component, but there's also this certain part that the person contributes to making the miracle happen. So the person is playing a role in activating the miracle. That's the second kind of miracle. But there's a third kind of miracle. What's the third miracle, as we say? The gimel, that's on the bottom line. Nature can have zero to do with this miracle. This type of miracle, I'm sorry, you have to skip a few pages, and it says 5a on the, because it's a continuation from the Sfarnu, I think it's like three pages later. 5a, is that right? On top? Yeah, oh, I'm sorry, yeah, keep going. Oi. Where it is. Oh, sorry. No. Oh, you don't have it, maybe? How could it be? We have,
a lot of pages. Oy
vey. Yeah. Sorry. All the way at the, oh my gosh, what did I do?
It says eight.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Eight on the bottom and
it's
five.
Eight on the side.
Oh,
lift,
my gosh.
And
sorry.
On the top.
Sorry that it's so confusing, because it's before that for sure. At least say yes. Before.
It's after 7b. Because the top is 7b, the next page,
just
after 7b at the top.
It must be the page before that, maybe. Oh,
yeah.
That's the one. Beautiful. Okay, sorry. Okay, here we go. All right, so here he says, so this type of miracle, totally by Hashem. What does that mean? Shehi pu'ula sichlis v'yoyser nichbedes misha'ah b'dibor bilvat. Okay, so this is done only by the speech. Ah. Even though it's activated by one of his prophets, but it's not activated by an action. It's activated only by speech, which is much less of an action than hitting a rock, because that shows more that it's God doing it. It's more miraculous. That's why, what does Hashem want Moshe to do here? Speak to the rock. Do not hit the rock. Hitting would definitely be spoiling this type of miracle. And we'll see why we need this type of miracle here, but let's just see. He says, because speaking is pula sichris. It's a more refined type of action. Yoyser nichbedes mishar tnuos hagashmis. It's actually more refined than other physical actions. Because speech is a person doing. Action is something which all physical things can do. So speech is more refined, it's more godly in a sense. It's a higher level. What does that mean, he says? And he gives a few examples. Bepsichas pi haaretz. Like by Kairach, what opens up? The mouth of the earth. Interesting. But anyways, that's a real miracle. And when was that? When Moshe stopped speaking. Moshe stopped speaking because Moshe asked Hashem to do something drastic. And the earth opens up. So that's a wacky miracle that we know is only miraculous. Nothing to do with a human action. Remember in the time of Yeshua, when he was fighting the war and he needed the day to go on and the sun stood still. I mean, that's crazy. How could the sun stand still and the day get longer? That's an absolute total miracle. That was after Yeshua stopped speaking. Again, so the speech activated, not an action, just speech, but of course it's an amazing miracle. And then we say, V'hine b'inyan zeis, ha-meriva hoya mina hechrech, le-havir es ras tlunos Yisrael. And we needed this type of miracle to remove this mistaken, this terrible negative attitude, this complaint of the Jewish people. This miracle had to explain and show how great, how the kindness of the king, who is the one who is sending, how kind he is, how good he is, and how he only wants the good of the Jewish people. And he says, and also to show how good the shliach is, how good Moshe is. El Shayitav HaMelech Al Yodei La'ameh, and that he's ready to do everything good that the one who is sending him to do. In other words, we have to also see how the sender is listening to the one who is sending him. And this is where Moshe makes a little bit of a mistake here. Because what happens, and that's only done through, as we say, this third type of miracle. Asher lo yuchal ateva klal olav b'shum oifen u'b'shum zman. So then he goes on and he says something interesting. The truth is that, in a sense, even if Moshe would have hit the rock, that also would have shown something good about Moshe, because he's activating the rock to give water. But what it wouldn't have shown is that he is totally nullified to the one who is sending him. And the one who is sending him is activating miracles through him, but really, he doesn't have much to do with the miracle. He's just there to lead the people and to guide them to know who's running the world. That's what Hashem wanted here. Because the people complained about Moshe. Oh, he took us to the bad part of the desert. No, he took us to where Hashem wanted him to take you. He listens to God. So him hitting the rock, not a good idea. And also, the fact that he hit the rock also showed that Hashem almost activates miracles more naturally. And Hashem wanted to show the people, I took you out of Egypt. Egypt is a wonderful country, whatever. It wasn't wonderful to you, but it's a wonderful country in the sense that it has resources. I took you into a desert which has no resources. But I can do anything. I can make water come out of a rock miraculously. So what are you worried about? And this is the mistake that Moshe made. Not to instill in the Jewish people enough of that realization so that they should realize, what are we saying? How could we continue complaining the way we are? Our complaints are so misguided. This was the mistake. So again, it's not even what he did. He didn't even do anything terrible. But it was just the fact that he was there to teach them, to inspire them, and to get them to correct their ways. And by him hitting the rock, he didn't correct their ways. It actually, unfortunately, only reinforced a little bit that perhaps there needs to be a little bit more natural activity to activate miracles. And if that's the case, maybe the desert isn't the best place for us. Or, you know, that kind of thing. So that was it. This is the Svarnu's view. So it's a deeper view, but it's an interesting one. Because to him, it's so subtle. You can see the subtlety of it. Because it's very hard to find where they really went wrong. Okay, go now, since we're on this page, I want to show you something. Go to the bottom, the Ramban, strong words. If you look at number 8, and look at where it actually says the 8, you see that paragraph? And I want to show you, because the Ramban quotes the Rambam that we did last time about how Moshe Rabbeinu got angry, and sin is just that he got angry. And really, because if he got angry, the people will think that Hashem is angry. How could we say that? And he was accusing such a holy nation of such a terrible thing. So the language the Ramban uses is very strong. Look what he says. V'hoisif hevel al havolim. Do you know what hevel al havolim? Nonsense upon nonsense. That's how he talks about the Rambam's view. Sheh hakosav amar merisem. And he says, why? Why is it nonsense? Because he says, the pasuk says, merisem pi, you have rebelled against my mouth. Sheavru al diburo, that they actually transgressed his word. For Omar, and what else? Lo ye'emantem, but you didn't believe in me. Shelo ye'eminu bi, that they didn't believe in God. Ein ha'einesh ba'avur shekas, the punishment is definitely not because of the fact that they got angry. And he says, how do I know that for sure? V'yoyser ha'yoroi, she'ye'einesh al Moshe, she'kishakatsaf apkudei achayil. He says, if you go further in the Chumash, you'll see there's another story. There was an army, right? There was people who were going into war, and Moshe Rabbeinu got upset with them. Why did Hashem get angry there? Anger. Nah, nothing. No, nothing. Moshe's not punished. There's nothing wrong. You can lose your anger, but show, so to speak, displeasure in that strong way, which Moshe Rabbeinu did. There's nothing wrong. The Ramban says an interesting thing. V'akosav le'siper klal shekas, and the pasuk doesn't even tell us at all that he got angry. Why? Because he says the words shimu no hamayrim, that's what the Rambam used. Listen, you rebels. And the Rambam says that was said in anger. He says, no, that's not anger. That's toichacha. That's just telling the people that they're doing the wrong thing. Listen, you rebels. You are rebelling. You are going wrong. So it's not anger. He says he doesn't like that. And then he says, kederach mamrim hayisem im Hashem, just like he said in other places. You were rebels against Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu repeats that. So obviously that's not anger. V'oid, and another thing, a very beautiful proof, he says, ki Aaron loikas miyamav. Aaron never got angry. You can't say angry by Aaron. How do we know that Aaron never got angry? Ki b'shalom u'bimishar halach me'oidai. He always went in a way of peace and in a way of calmness, serenity. That's what Aaron is known for, and it is wrong to accuse Aaron that he got angry. That's what the Ramban says. Impossible. And also, one of the Rambam's things was, Moshe got angry, and Hashem wasn't angry, and the people would interpret Moshe's anger that Hashem got angry. Do you remember? Because Moshe is the servant of Hashem. He says, hold it. Who says Hashem's not angry? Of course Hashem is angry. They're doing the wrong thing. What do you think? Hashem's not displeased with them? Of course he's displeased with them. And he proves it, and he says, because, of course, when they come and they quarrel against Moshe, we already have it before in other stories. Right, all the times, remember when they came to Moshe, they said, why did you take us out of Egypt? They had done this already many times. They wanted to be slaves to their enemies, right, in Egypt. They said, why did you take us out of Egypt? Rather be slaves in Egypt rather than to be with God. Kiven ha'ave des aviv, like a son who serves their father, right? That's what they complained many times. And was that happy? Was Hashem happy with that? And we know, what does it say? V'chein amar ha'kasuv, yan ki ma'astem es Hashem asher b'kir b'chem. You literally were acted in a disgusting way before God who is amongst you. In other words, Hashem wasn't happy. And you cried before him. Remember, by the time of the Chet HaMeraglim, when they sinned with the spies, you think Hashem wasn't angry at them? He was real angry at them. He even made that day a day of crying forever. So what is this thing that the Rambam says that Hashem wasn't displeased? Of course he was displeased. So there's something very faulty, according to the Ramban, in the Rambam's view. And then he says, what else? Just to see a little bit more how he knocks him, and then we'll see his own view. Very strong language, but let me see. Okay, really, that he just goes on more and more with this. He says, what greater sin could there be? Somebody who rebels against their own creator and their own master. Obviously, Hashem is not happy with the Jewish people. And look, Moshe Rabbeinu himself says in Chumash Devarim, Gam bi hisanaf Hashem biglalchem. Hashem got angry at me because of you. In other words, you were the ones who caused Hashem to be angry. In Cain, Heim Chatu, so they definitely sinned. V'garmu kol harazais, and they caused all the negativity. V'ledivrei harav, ein lahem b'chol hamaisa zecheitu pesha klal. And according to the Rambam, it seems that he's implying that the Jewish people don't have a hand in the sin. It's all Moshe and Aaron, that they shouldn't have gotten angry, and that's why they got this terrible thing. If you go to the next page, is the number 8 on the top, do you see? Is that right, or did I not? I hope so. Oh, I think you know what?
Yeah.
I think I might have missed it. Do you have an 8? But okay, so don't worry. I'll just tell you quickly. No, it's okay. I'll come to that in 1 second. And he says, let me just see. Okay, so let's go to the one that you have, number 8, right? Yeah, Vakarev. Do you see that word, Vakarev? Okay, so now, is that right? Is that, yeah. This is now the Ramban's own view. So after he knocks the Rambam, he goes over knocking. Let's see, what does he say? So he says, he actually also goes into what the Evan Ezra says, which we didn't say yet, but he also doesn't like all the different views. One person that he quotes, Reb Chananel, he says, I think he's the closest to the truth. Vakarev min advarim shenemru bazeh, V'hu toiv litchais hashayel. This is the one that can actually, so to speak, push away. The one who is asking, and in other words, this is the only one that could perhaps quench somebody's questions that they have on this story to understand what's the problem. Heim divrei Rabbi Chananel, Rabbeinu Chananel. And what does he write? Shekosav. Ki hachetu, what is the sin? A few words also. What did they say? Hamin Hasela hazeh, from this rock, and you'll see it's literally one word, noitzi lachem mayim. What is noitzi? Oh, we will, we. Nun is the we, anachnu, which means who is he including? Himself and Aaron and God. And what should he have said? Hamin hasela, he says, v'roi sheyimru, yoitzi Hashem lachem mayim. Hashem will give eyes. Such a small detail, which is so really, really very almost insignificant. And Moshe didn't intend anything because Moshe was a messenger of God, obviously. And yet he's held to such a high standard. Similar to what the Svarnu says, because it has to do with instilling and teaching the people. So Moshe said, we will give forth water. And Hashem says, I am the one that's giving forth water. You have nothing to do with it. You're a person. You're a human being. The miracle comes directly and exclusively from God. And these words is a problem, according to Rav Hanana. Very strong, such a punishment for it. I'll just quickly read you a little bit more how he says it. So he says, that's what he says, Hayyati, okay, Kederach Sha'amru, B'seis Hashem lachem, like he said in other times, that Hashem will give you ba'erev basar lechem, flesh, you know, meat. When they complained they didn't have meat, so he said, Hashem will give you the meat. That's what he should have done here. Hashem will give you the water. V'chein b'chol ha'nisim, all miracles, yaidiyum ki Hashem yaseh imohem lahafli, he let them know that Hashem will do it for them in order to give them the wonder. V'ulai chashvu ha'am ki Moshe v'aram b'chach masam. Because maybe the people will think that Moshe and Aaron, in their wisdom, will be able to extract water from this rock. Meaning to say, in other words, even if it's a little bit miraculous, it's not totally miraculous, some scientific breakthrough, and they know how to get water out of this rock. And that's what Hashem didn't want in this case. No contribution from man, totally in the hands of Hashem. And he says, "V'zehu lo kiddashtem," and that's and that's why he says, "You didn't cause a kiddush Hashem, right? You didn't sanctify me." U'maisa harishem, but you know the first story, Bitzur, when he did the rock, and then he hit the rock, and over there, what happened? Hinenei oimed lefanech Hashem al hatzur b'chayrev. Over there, we know it says Hashem was standing before them on the rock, which means Vishivim Haskenim, the 70 elders, what did they see? Rayim Omud Ha'onon, Oimed Al Hatsur. Over there was obvious. There was a cloud, and that was God's presence. And it was obvious it was only God. Here, there was no cloud directly on the rock. So it wasn't so obvious. So it was more important that Moshe should state clearly that it's all coming from Hashem. And this is the problem. And this is Aval Bakan Loi Ra'u Davar. They didn't see anything. Vito'u, and therefore they made a mistake. B'maimer Moshe v'Aaron, what Aaron and Moshe and Aaron said. So it's possible that's why we can say that you like trespassed against me. When you use something that's sanctified for your own self, that's called me'ila. That's what it's called. It means that you're taking something that should be holy and you're using it for something which is not holy. In this context, this was supposed to be an exclusive miracle and you mixed yourself into the miracle. That is not good. And then he says, V'chein merisempi, you've rebelled against me. That's very strong language. Why? Shehu tziva, because Hashem commanded, V'dibartem el hasela leinayim, that you should speak to the rock before their eyes. V'hatam, and for what reason? She'es kadesh leinayim, that I should be sanctified. Oy shnisem devarai. Oh, you changed my words. Min v'tamres mishpati, like the words merisem could be also that you changed. And he gives another pasuk which shows that the word mari mar can be to exchange. It's an exchange. So you've exchanged my laws. Again, you changed my words. Ki light sivisi shetaim rukacha. I didn't tell you to say it this way. V'yelai himantem bi. You didn't. Therefore. It's like you didn't believe in me. It's not that you didn't believe. What does it mean? It doesn't mean Moshe and Aaron didn't believe. Of course they believed in Hashem. But what does that mean you didn't believe in me? It means you didn't cause the Jewish people to increase in their belief in me. And that's what he's saying. Yaitzei al b'nei Yisrael, this is referring to the Jewish people. Or, oy hu lashon chizuk. When we talk about hemantem, you didn't strengthen their emunah. Layis chazaktem lehaktisheni leineyem. You didn't strengthen yourselves, and you didn't improve that I should be sanctified before the eyes of the Jewish people. Min va'omna al hamisherim. Another pasuk which shows us that this word can be to actually to, so to speak, to train and to improve the people and to give them a deeper insight and a clearer insight into who's really running the world. And that's the mistake. So a slight mistake, according to the Ramban, but it's his own view. As we say, they shouldn't have been at all, it should have been absolutely 100,000% clear that this is a total miracle from God. No hand, none of their hand in it, no human hand, totally Hashem. And this would have caused a tremendous sanctification of Hashem's name and given them stronger emuna.
He said, but only did they know that Hashem told Moshe to speak to the rock.
Yeah, that's a very good question, Rona. That's an excellent question. And the truth is there's different opinions. That's a very good question.
How would they know?
How would they know, right? It's a very good question. So the truth is, that's why, what you're saying is an excellent question. That's why what the Sfarnu said before was that perhaps the Jewish people didn't even know that. But speaking is more miraculous than hitting. And that's what Hashem wanted Moshe to do, even if the people don't know. Just to show the people that even speaking to the rock makes this miracle happen, which is much more miraculous for the people than hitting, because hitting is an action. And it's almost like turning on the faucet, you know, kind of a thing. Whereas speaking is so much more distant. So you're right, they might not have known that Hashem said it, and that's why even more important for them to do it that way. Fascinating thing. But there's a whole, the Aruch Chaim has a whole long exposition about how speaking could have been also the idea, very beautiful idea, that when you speak to something, that means, and somebody listens, it's very different to like when you have a child and you give them a patch and they listen. Because if you spank somebody and they listen, that means they feel compelled to listen. They're like almost forced. But when you speak to somebody, that means they're willingly listening to you. And this is also what Hashem wanted. Hashem wanted to display to the Jewish people that the relationship that he wants with the Jewish people is where they listen because they want to, not because they feel they have to. So that's another interesting, it's a very fascinating idea. Because there are a whole long thing about that. But why didn't Moshe do it then? And the whole thing, how Moshe didn't see such a difference. But Moshe was worried that if he would speak to the rock and it wouldn't listen, it would be even worse. And therefore, because he didn't know which rock, that was the problem. And he knew he didn't know which rock. So he thought, I'm going to be speaking to a few rocks until they find the right one. And by then, the Jewish people will, so to speak, lose, in a sense, concentration and also lose this lesson. And that will even backfire more. But Hashem was upset. He said, Moshe should have had even more bitachon and trusted that if I want him to teach this lesson, I will make it happen, even if he speaks to the wrong rock. Very interesting. It will happen. But it's fascinating, this idea that speaking is so much more powerful in the sense where we should be doing things because we choose to, because we want to, because we do it with love. And that's a very important one also.
Yes, it's
a chinuch lesson. All of it is. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. So there's so much involved here. It's beyond. Okay, I want to see now. Let's go now. Go back. I think in your booklet, I should have a booklet in front of me so I can see which way you should go. I think you have to go back. It is, I know, I'll see which number and then I'll tell you if to go back or not. It was the Maharal's one I want to do. Let's see if I could find it in here, what number it was. And then I'll tell you. Oh, don't have it here, right? It has a different font. Let's see. It looks like this. It has a number 7 on the top of the page. Do you see a number 7? So there's 2 pages, number 7 and number 7B. So that's the one I want to do now. I want to show you something beautiful. We're going to go to the bottom of this page. Just see where I put it here. It's really incredible. So this is, as I said, this is the Maharal, Gur Aryeh. Interesting, our name, Gur Aryeh, comes from, because my husband's family does come from the Maharal, and that's the name, Gur Aryeh. It's interesting, it's fascinating. That's the name of his explanation on Rashi. Just want to see something. Number 7 on the bottom. Okay, so if you look where it says, She'ilu dibartem. You see those words, She'ilu Dibartem? It's on the second column towards the sort of the last paragraph.
We're going to do actually from the middle. I think, do you have a line on yours? Did it come out? Okay, because we're actually going to start reading from where the line is. But I just want to show you something. He says, this is, as we say, he's explaining Rashi. So Rashi's whole thing was, they should have spoken to the rock. And because they didn't, and they hid it, as we said, bad, bad news. That was the problem. Okay, because they didn't follow the instruction. So he has a very interesting question. And he says like this, that many people bring different reasons for the sin, like explanations for the sin. And as he brings the famous one from the Rambam that we mentioned, Shimuna Hamayrim, the fact that they were angry, and they said to the people, you rebels, listen, you rebels. And that was a big problem, because first of all, it's demeaning to the Jewish people to call them rebels and to act in anger. And he wants to know, what is the mistake? So let's see. Where do we want to start here? In the words, okay, Omnam, yeah, where the line starts. Omnam kasher teida ha'emes kishnei hachatoim. So let's see here where I see it. Let's see, sorry, because I don't have my line on on here. Let's see if I could find where I put it here. Okay. I don't know, I can't find it. It's ready, but I can't find it. Okay. Maybe I wonder if this is cut off a little bit. That's what I'm wondering. Why can't I see it? I'm so sorry. And I can't see it. Oh, yeah, okay, good here. Okay. Kishnei hachatam. So he says two sins. What are two sins? One sin is that they got angry, and one sin is that they actually hit the rock and didn't speak to the rock. So he says, which one is it? So he says the truth is they're one and the same. Okay, let's see. It's a very beautiful idea. And it's a little lengthy, but it's really one idea, but I'll just read some of it. So he says, why is it the same and how does it work? Because like this. Okay. Kishnei hachatoim, the two sins, Masha Omar, Shimuna Hamayur, the fact that they said, listen, you rebels, V'chein Masha Hika Es Hasela, and the fact that they hit the rock, Pa'amayim, twice, Hakol Cheit Echad, it's one sin. Why? Many people are confused in this explanation. I guess he's also alluding to the Ramban, who didn't like the Rambam's explanation. So now he's going to give a little bit of a deeper idea of how it works. And they don't know how to stand on the truth of what is really the sin. So we have to explain it. Da. The sin of Moshe and Aaron, as it is written in the Pesukim, it says very clearly, the mistake, you didn't believe in me, and as we said, it doesn't mean you necessarily, but you didn't increase and improve and instill faith and sanctify me. That's part of the Emunah, to sanctify me. The fact that they hit twice, El Hasela the Ra, Kasher Nasela, and Nase, when a miracle was being done, Kizehu Yitzia min ha'emunah. This is leaving Emunah. Why? Ki osu maiseze derech kas. Now he's going to obviously elaborate on the Rambam's view, but he's going to bring it into a beautiful way. So he says, the biggest problem, the key, is the anger. But he's going to take it deeper. Where does the anger come from? Okay, so obviously they're displaying anger. Whether they felt anger or not, but they're displaying anger. Umisha oise mitzvah Hashem derech kas. Somebody who does the mitzvah of Hashem in a way of anger. So you're doing it. Like you're following, right? You're doing the mitzvah, but you're angry. Don't want to say sometimes, right? It's the Erev, I don't know what, Erev, whatever, when it comes to the end of Yontif and we're all exhausted and it's another Erev and, you know, you're not so happy. And you do it a little bit resentfully. What does that show? He says a very interesting thing. Befrat kasher nasa lahem nes, especially when a miracle has just been done for them. Kazeh, such a miracle. K'may sha'asuhein, like they were doing. Sh'amru shinu nahamayrim. How do we see they're angry? They say, listen, you rebels. And that's one way that they display their anger. And the other way, shehiku ala sela, that they hit the rock. Ein ze emuna, this is definitely not emuna. Why? What does anger have to do with it? What does that mean? Just they're angry, they're impatient. Ki ha emuna hu, misha b'iteyach b'yisparech. Because somebody who has emuna is somebody who trusts in Hashem. Ein loy b'irak simcha. This is such powerful words. The way we gauge it, the thermometer, how do we know?
that we are truly going in a way of emuna is if we are filled with joy. If we are missing joy, we know there's something wrong. There's a fever. It's off. We're off. Okay, let's see how he develops it a little bit. Because he says, and it's a very powerful words. He says, because somebody who has emunah and betachen will only be in a state of joy. Shezeh inyan emunah. Because this is what emunah means. Some of us think it's two different things. I have emunah, I have betachen. What could I do? I'm not in a good mood. I'm not happy. I have a lot of complaints. A lot of things are difficult. It's two separate things. He says, no. It's all one, and you cannot separate them. And he says like this. Why? Because he says, Shezeh inyan emunah, shemayim min bayi ubeiteyach bayi, that you believe in him and you trust in him. V'im ha-bitachen ha-simcha. And with bitachen comes joy. Aval im ha-kas, ein kan emunah. With anger, there's no emunah. U'ma shehikupa mayim, and the fact that they hit it twice, it's not just once, they hit it twice. That shows that there was a lack of emunah and betachen. And that's why they get angry. Because somebody who doesn't have emunah and trust, the betachen gomer with absolute trust, who bekas, he's angry. And he's in pain. And we know, this obviously follows logically. Anger comes from a sense of injustice. When we think something should go a different way, that's when we get angry. When we want something to go one way and it goes another way, that's where anger comes from. When we are at peace with what is happening, we're not angry. That's the opposite of anger. Anger comes when we think we know better. As we say, my mother always used to say, thank God I'm not God. But when we think we're God and we think we could run the world better, well, then we're angry. That's what happens. I know better, God. I think that this should have happened, or I could have been this way. That's where we get angry. So betachen and emunah, in the place where somebody is strong in their betachen, there's no space for anger. We can be frustrated. Doesn't mean you can't get frustrated sometimes, because that's natural. But you won't really get angry, and you'll stop yourself slowly. You'll self-talk, and you'll calm down because and you won't hit the rock twice. As we can see, because you know that it's all somebody else is running the situation. So what's there to get angry, as we say? And I just want to read a little more. I know it's a little bit repetitive, but it's very beautiful how he brings it out. He says, as we said, Hashem says to take water from the rock. They should have done it with emunah. Hashem is doing such a tremendous miracle for the Jewish people to take out water dafka from a rock. And then they would see, that's what they needed to display. The trust that they have in Hashem. What Hashem does for his creations. So actually it's a very big emunah bitachon that's being asked, but it's because Hashem wanted them to renew the emunah bitachon in the people. That was the idea. They would have been doing it with joy. They should have added, increased in their faith and in their trust. They should have been happy. So don't say they weren't really angry. They were only upset with the way the Jewish people were behaving. So he says, it's not a question. It's a very powerful idea. There would have been no room for any drop of anger even at the Jewish people, or even to see the Jewish people in that way. If they would have been filled with emunah and betachen to such a degree and displayed it to such a degree, what would have happened is it would have even rubbed off to the people. That's why they say nowadays also, like when you talk to other people, they say it's with children, but even with others, when somebody's upset and you respond calmly, sometimes people get a bit more upset, but the truth is that inevitably they will calm down. If you are upset and they're upset, it fans it, right? Then it just feeds off each other. But when you respond calmly, what ends up happening is the anger dissipates. It does, slowly. So all the rebelliousness of the people would have gone had Moshe and Aaron just displayed tremendous joy. And this joy would have been a display of their incredible emunah and betachon. So it's a very powerful idea that the Gerarye says, and very strong demand of Moshe and Aaron, actually. That's why we say it, like, you know, on their level, obviously. But
sad. They just lost their sister.
100. It's such an interesting thing. To put it all, they just lost their sister. So many of the people have already passed away that they knew over the 40 years. There's a lot of things. And also, this is not the first time. They have been tried so many times. And it's not them. They're thinking, what kind of people are these? Are they ever going to, you know, sometimes when you, I think especially with, I don't know, teenagers or whatever, you think, are they ever going to learn? You know, like, after all this time, we've tried so much. And they're almost repeating the exact same mistake again. So that's, it's so hard. But this is the demand. So that, the only, the antidote we can see is betachen. We have to fill ourselves with tremendous betachen. It's the only way. Okay, I want to see if this was, if there was, it goes on and on, but it says it twice. I mean, it doesn't say it twice, it says a few, but he has a few others just coming through. Let me just see. That's why he says, okay, that's why he says that it's all the same sin. It's exactly the same sin. The fact that they said, Shimuna Hamayrim, listen, you rebels. The fact that they hit it twice. It's all a display of anger as opposed to Simcha. Had they been full of Simcha, there wouldn't have been room for this kas. It couldn't have been there. Let me just see. And that's also, oh, and that's also why the idea of Lahakti Sheni, to sanctify me, because this brings holiness, Kedusha. Kedusha is in a place of Simcha, as we say. Because why? It makes sense now. Because Simcha is in a place of betachen, and betachen is Kedusha, because that means you're trusting that there is a presence of God there. The presence of God becomes obvious. When does the presence of God become obvious? When you are at peace with the situation, when you realize that there is a reality of God running your life, your individual moment-by-moment life. So that all fits together. The lack, so to speak, the anger is the opposite of what should have been. The joy, which would have been an incredible Kiddush Hashem, sanctification of Hashem's name. And that's really what was expected, because Hashem wanted to instill that in the people very, very strongly. Especially in such a time of such an incredible miracle, it really would have brought it home to them. And as he says, it would have brought it home to them that Hashem is there for them. Even from a rock, he could make water come out. When you are filled with joy. And that's a big, big one. Okay, I want to show you something beautiful. Go to the next page. Then I think I did number something. I don't know, it's not the next page on your booklet. Go to the end where it says 12A. Time goes so, so fast. But I just run quickly through something beautiful, a lesson based on this. So the page that says it has a 12A is all the way at the end. I think like the third to last page or something. Third or fourth to last page. 12A will come maybe next week. We'll do one more, but we'll move on. But I wanted to show you something beautiful. So this tying this idea in that we just said now about Simcha, Betachen, all goes together. So the big question is, what's the connection between Simcha and Betachen? And also, it is connected to Tshuva. And we mentioned this in the Sfarnu, the idea being that we should bring the people to Tshuva, but it's all of us, it's our life. So now we're in the month of Elul. And many people think Elul is a time, it is serious retrospection. You know, the Sfaradim, they're gonna get up nice and early every morning crying, and we should also be making Cheshbon HaNefesh. And sometimes we don't equate that with Simcha. We equate that with actually quite a painful experience, because we wanna be real, we wanna be honest. But we say the only way to do proper Tshuva is through Simcha. Not necessarily Simcha like Simcha Steiris Simcha, but a feeling, as we say, of a complete trust and reliance on Hashem. Without that, there is no possibility of tshuva. Let's see how. What's the connection? So I'll run through quickly. He says, I'll read some of it, I'll just translate directly, and some I'll read here. He says that a person, a person's life is made up of three, you know, thought, speech, and action. And he says that the truth is that we'll go to the next page. I think it says 12b. We know the beautiful idea that tshuva is such a gift from Hashem. That's the first thing we have to know, because generally speaking, we know that whatever has happened in the past, something that has already been done, is permanent. That's what happens, right? Permanent. Once you do something, it's not changeable, so to speak. But Hashem gave us a gift, and he gave us the gift of tshuva, that we have the power to even change the past. So that's an incredible, beautiful, magnificent gift, that we can actually affect the past. So that's already something that should put us in a so to speak, appreciative mood, if we want to say. But then we say that when a person realizes that everything that they've done is there forever, we know, whatever we do, like we say something to somebody, it doesn't just go, you know, it has an effect. So that can sometimes make us a little bit worried, because sometimes we don't always do the right thing, and we stop to think, and we say, oh, maybe I've done something that has hurt somebody, it's there forever, so you can start to get a little bit down. So he says, but the truth is that a person has to realize that they shouldn't be upset, they shouldn't be devastated. Why? Because, he says, first of all, we have the power of tshuva, as we just said, and also a person has to realize that Hashem supervises and runs the world, right, as we say, and Hashem helps us every single step of the way. And therefore, we can approach Rosh Hashanah with tremendous joy, knowing that even in our process of tshuva, Hashem will help us. It's not just, obviously, we have to make the first move, but Hashem is there to help us along. Now, I want to just go, but we have to obviously make the commitment to start, to move, to change, and then Hashem will help us. Now, I want to just show you, sorry, just because time is up, go to the next page. That's all I want to read inside. Now, look at Gimel, it says Gimel over there. How can we demand every single Jew, that he should come to this level, that no matter what the situation is, he should always be with joy, right? And truly happy. As we're saying, that's what we want. That's what the Maharal said. They should always have been in a state of joy. In a state of joy, there's no anger. Especially when we come with the proper accounting, mitzad echad, and especially as we say and we analyze and we look at the world and we say that we're talking about that we want Hashem wants to dwell down here, and where does He want, and where do we live in a physical world, and what type of people are we? We're Jewish, and we look around the world and we see the news and we see how we are one amongst all the nations. No matter what, every single day there's something else that's coming against us, even in this wonderful country of Australia. The government can change in a minute and everything changes and shifts. So it does get you down. How can you expect a person to constantly be in a state of joy if that's the case? So look what he says, a beautiful thing. Hezber lekach. Hezber hamuvan lekol echad v'achas. It's something which we all understand, that we can be in a state of bitachin v'hakadosh baruch hu. Trust. The only way is realizing who really runs the world. And have that reality and trust in Hashem. Shehu yisoid b'Torah. This is a foundation of Torah. Teres chayim hayras b'chayim. Right. This is our lesson for life. Kefi shadavra mutgosh b'mizbar. And we say it now. We're coming to the beautiful month, the month of Elul, where we will be saying every single day, twice a day, the post, the perek in Tillim, chapter 27, l'David Hashem ayri. What does that mean? Hashem says, Hashem is my, David HaMelech says, Hashem is my light and my salvation. Mimi ira, whom shall I fear? We have to really like bring that home so strongly, especially now. I don't know, it's just like every time you think it can't get worse, it like gets worse. But no, Mimi, who should we be afraid of? He says, Habitachem b'Hashem, oysem mivateya David HaMelech b'shmai shall call ish Yisroel. This bitachon David HaMelech is expressing the feeling that is within each and every one of us, that every single one of us can rely totally on the help of Hashem, both physically and spiritually. And then, there was one beautiful paragraph here. If you look on, sorry, then it doesn't matter. The next page is Inyan HaBitachon Hu Hargasha. What is this bitachon, this feeling? Shel Vada'os, of absolute certainty and reliance, Shakadosh Baruch Hu Yisayeya, that Hashem helps, lehiskaber al kol kishuyei hachayim, on all the challenges of life. That's what betochen means. That we really, truly feel, like in a real way, that Hashem gives us the strength to overcome, even if there are challenges and they are real. And we are talking about both physical and spiritual challenges. Why? Because Hashem is my light and my salvation, which means that we can accomplish what we are meant to accomplish in this world in a joyous way. So when we have the bitachon and we know that Hashem is there and He is oiri, and remember, our light is simcha. When there's light and there's clarity, there's joy. It's when there's confusion, when it's darkness, that there's a lack of joy. And when we have that in a really strong way, and this is what we have to develop and really internalize even more in the month of Elul, we will be filled with joy. And then we will never get angry, as we say. We'll be the opposite. There's no room for anger when you're in a state of joy. I just want to see. That's what we, okay, then. Other program, it says, that our forefathers have trusted in you. And we say, the more we put the effort in down here, the more Hashem shines upon us from above. So we work on it, we increase our joy. And it's interesting, it is true. The more we feel gratitude and joy, there's no room left for the anger. It pushes it away. If we feel angry, that's a way to us, okay, just, we shouldn't get too upset with ourselves. We should just say, okay, stop, analyze, and realize perhaps we have to increase in our bitachon. And one of the ways, I think it's such a beautiful thing, this chapter in Tehillim is so worth its own few shiurim, but even just to look at the English and to realize and to really internalize that Hashem is my light, which means He's there with us constantly, and even when we go off, He's our salvation. So He comes to help us even when we've done something wrong. So of course, how can we be in fear? And another thing, so it's anger and fear that are the opposite of betachen and joy. That's what we have to increase. So this is the way to make sure that we will not be hitting any rocks and we'll be seeing godliness, as we say, seeing Hashem running our life, so we'll have a life full of bracha, merz Hashem. That's the hope, that's what we try, that's what we work on. And this is what Moshe was supposed to, but I'm just going to finish next week with that Aruch Hayim, a few words, but instill in the Jewish people that strong feeling, and then he could have taken them into Israel. But anyways, we'll see that next week. But it doesn't matter. But we're still working on it. It's all good. We're working on it. A work in progress. Baruch Hashem, you're very welcome. Yes.
Just for me today.
Oh, Rona. I love you, Rona. All right, I'm just going to stop this share. I don't know if anybody... So Baruch Hashem, next week we will continue. We will... move on, we will. There's other beautiful stories in the parsha, but I know, but just there's so much depth to this one. I'm sorry, I still see that you can. Thank you, Chana. Thank you. Press this thing. Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, Melanie. Have a good week. What, Chana? Sorry. For us, what?
This is good.
In hindsight.
Of course, that's what that. So you know, that's what we have to ask of our Sechana. That you're right. That's a, you're right, and it's still so difficult. Exactly, exactly. That's why. That's why we have to not be so harsh on them. It's true. I know.
Even with hindsight,
we're
not
weak.
I know.
That's it. Yes. 100%.
Between Rashi and Rambam?
Oh, that's a good question. So the Rashi lived about the year 1000, the Rambam 1200s, and the Maharal in the 1600s. Yes, yeah, so it's...
So many years,
I know. And you know what? They're all alive. You're right. You're right. And the Ramban. But you know what's beautiful about Torah? It's alive. So... we live with all of them, and they lived with them. Like, that's just the beauty. And even when they argue, you know, they argue sharply, but it's all done with respect. It's just learning. It's the way that, you know, it means it's real.
So
that's it, exactly right. That's it. That's what it says. Just like two people don't look alike, nobody thinks alike. That's it. Oh, Hannah, good. We'll see you. Ah, oh, she has the schuss here. Thank you, Lisa. Good to see you. Oh, good, wonderful. We'll see you.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, it's a good way to start the week. And now we've got work to do. Okay, good to see everybody. Daisy, Elna, Moira, Lisa. And have a good week, everybody. You're all still muted. I don't know. Anyway. Okay. Bye. Bye, Elma Mayra. Bye, Daisy. Okay.